My name is Edward George Eaton. I was born at Trentham in Staffordshire. I was orphaned soon after my birth and was brought up by my uncle, George Eaton. He educated me generously and fired my ambition to succeed in the world. At his death, 4 years ago, he left me his entire fortune, the sum of £500. In that year of grace, 1886, a not inconsiderable sum. I became a medical student at University College London. I lodged at 11A University Street. At the time of the beginning of my story, I was taking a pair of shoes to be mended at a shop in the Tottenham Court Road, when I encountered the little old man with the yellow face, with whom my life has now become so inextricably entangled.
Mr. Eden?
Hmm?
I had forgotten the number of your house. You left your front door at an opportune moment. How do you do, Mr. Eden?
How do you...
Wonder who the deuce I am, eh? Friends, let me assure you. I've seen you before, though you haven't seen me. Is there somewhere we can talk?
Well, perhaps we can walk down the street. I was going to the cobbler's.
Oh, yeah, the very thing, the street. Which way should we go? Look here, this business of mine is a rigmarole. Come and lunch with me, Mr. Eaton. I'm an old man, a very old man, and not good at explanations. All the noise out here in the streets, come now, Mr. Eaton. A certain civility is due to my grey hairs, don't you think? Lunch with me. I'll explain my business and you shall see me.
Yes, all right. Let me just put these boots back in the hall of my lodging. Boots aren't quite the thing to take.
No.
Beyond Midnight.
The old man, Elvesham was his name, took Edward Eden to lunch at Blavitsky's. Over the kind of lunch the young student had never tasted before, Elvesham fended off the other man's leading questions, and Eden had a chance to study his benefactor of the day. Elvesham was lean and wrinkled. His shriveled lips fell over a set of false teeth, and his white hair was thin and rather long. He was small. His shoulders were rounded and bent. Elvesham was watching Eden, too, running his eyes, with a curious touch of greed in them, over the student's broad shoulders, sun-tanned hands and freckled face. At last, the meal ended, and they lighted cigarettes.
And now, I must tell you of the business in hand. It happens that I have money that I must presently be leaving, and never a child have I to leave it to. I have been for a long time, Mr. Eden, a very lonely man. I have thought long and searched long for a proper disposition of my money, and at last I have made a plan. I have recently thought of charities, institutions, scholarships, libraries, and so forth, but I have dismissed all these ideas. I have come to this conclusion. I will find some young fellow, ambitious, pure-minded, poor, but healthy in mind and body, and, in short, make him my heir, and give him all I have. Give him all I have. So that he will certainly be lifted out of all the trouble and struggle to freedom and influence.
And you want my help, my professional help, maybe, to find that person?
What a career such a man might have. It fills me with envy to think how I have accumulated that another man might spend. But there are conditions, of course, to be imposed, certain burdens. He must, for instance, take my name. You cannot expect everything without some return. And I must go into all the circumstances of his life before I can accept him. He must be sound. I must know his heredity, how his parents and grandparents died, have the strictest inquiries made into his personal morals.
And do I understand that I...
Yes, you. You.
But why me in particular?
Let us say I chanced to hear of you from Professor Heslar. He named you as a typically sound and sane young man. And after all, I want to leave my money where health and integrity are assured. Another cigarette, Mr. Eaton?
That was the first meeting. The old man was mysterious. He refused to give his name. The time, he said, was not yet come for that. His insistence upon bodily health was curious, Eaton thought. However, considerably excited by the thought of riches so easily come by, Edward Eaton applied for a life policy with a Loyal Insurance Company and was subsequently overhauled by their medical advisers. Even that did not satisfy the old gentleman, and he insisted Eaton be re-examined by the great Dr. Henderson. It was Friday, in Whitsun week, before he came to a decision.
Everything is satisfactory, Mr. Eaton. Everything is quite satisfactory. And this night of all nights, you must dine with me and celebrate your accession. You won't have long to wait either. Certainly not very long to wait. Let us call a cab. I shall take you to a rather splendid place in Regent Street.
They went to the splendid place in Regent Street, where Eden was disconcerted at first by the well-dressed waiter's glances at his poor clothes, by the stones and the olives, and by the array of cutlery. But the champagne warmed him, and his confidence revived.
My name, Mr. Eden, is Egbert Elvesham.
Egbert? Not the philosopher, the great...
The same.
I've been familiar with your name since a boy at school. Really?
So you think it incredible that a man whose intelligence so easily dominated yours in your extreme youth should suddenly materialize into the decrepit figure you see before you now, eh?
No, I didn't mean that.
I dare say every young person falling among celebrities is disappointed. The flesh is never so impressive as the reputation, hmm?
I never thought philosophers were so... well, so rich.
More champagne?
Why, thank you. Yes.
What a capacity for living you have. It will not be long now, I fear.
Please don't talk to me.
You have a fine future.
I have a fine future, perhaps, yes. Now, thanks to you, I shall have the honor of your name. But you have a past. Such a past is worth all my future.
That future, would you in truth change it?
A liqueur, sir?
He will not perhaps mind taking my name. Kümmel, both.
Very good, sir.
You will take my name, but would you take my years?
With your achievements?
Perhaps even then, despite the fact that he was more than a little drunk, Eden might have saved himself if he had risen from the table and fled into the night. The thought of riches, a brilliant future, success, dreams, all this stood between him and safety. And after all, Edward George Eaton had really no concrete notion that all was not well. How could he know? Then, the waiter brought the liqueurs.
This after-dinner hour, is the hour of small things. Here is a scrap of my unpublished wisdom. This powder. These glasses contain kümmel, that you know. But all my life, I have been an improver of liqueurs. This is kümmel. With a dash of this powder, it is something very fine indeed. Furthermore, it will assist you to defeat the effects of the champagne and brandy.
I was feeling a headache and more in the morning.
No, not now. There. My hat.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
To a quick succession.
Well, not that, sir. Not that. Rather to a long life.
To a long life.
The first touch capsule liqueur with the added powder set Eaton's brain in a tumult. He seemed to feel an actual physical stirring in his skull. The draft, the mental confusion, the noise and stirring in his head seemed to last an interminable time. Curious, vague impressions of half-forgotten things danced and vanished on the edge of his consciousness. Elsham stared strangely at him, and then the philosopher himself broke the spell.
Well,
it's glorious.
Well, 11:07. I must go to Waterloo at once. That stuff, I ought not to have given it to you. It'll make your head split tomorrow. Wait a minute. Here. Take this. In water as you're going to bed. The other thing was a drug. Not till you're ready to go to bed, mind. It will clear your head. That's all. One more shake. Futurist.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Beautiful Regent Street. 30 years ago, I quarreled with my brother in Regent Street. I wonder... 30? 30 years ago? I must be mad. I didn't exist 30 years ago. Peculiar. This all about me is Regent Street. I know it is. And yet all the time I have this queer persuasion that it's Waterloo Station. Quarrel with my brother. Quarrel. That's right.
Yes, I know.
Yet I've never boasted a brother. And 30 years ago... 30 years ago... 30 years ago there was no...
Along Portland Street, Eden's madness and feeling of strangeness took another turn. He began to recall vanished shops and compare the street with what it used to be. He continued on through Euston Road to Tottenham Court Road, scarcely noticing the unusual way he was taking. Turning into University Street, he found he had forgotten his number. Tried the wrong side of the hall for his candle and the matches, and had no clear idea at all upon which landing his room might be. Everything was perfectly familiar, and yet everything was perfectly strange. He reached his room at last and entered it.
Must take this other powder he gave me. This is getting what rot, Eden, you... You're certainly drunk, that's all. Have that powder and go to sleep. Powder and then sleep.
He came out of a dream of strange beasts and opened his eyes. In the grey dawn, the room was not familiar. And yet again it was. His thrust-out leg barely reached the edge of the mattress. By the side of the bed should be a candle and matches. He put out a hand and touched nothing. He waved a hand in the darkness and felt a curtain suspended over his bed. He was now thoroughly awake. The room was completely strange to him. How had he got there? He stood and felt curiously weak and unsteady. Where and what was this place? And then occurred a thing so trivial and yet so terrible that indeed it is a wonder that he did not immediately go out of his mind. He spoke aloud.
How the devil did I get here?
Voice was not his own.
Charlotte, this is a dream, a terrible dream.
And then he thrust his fingers into his mouth. His teeth had gone. The early morning light was becoming stronger. He staggered towards a mirror, and by the dawn, filtering in through the window from which he had drawn the curtains, he looked and saw...
Elmsham's face!
The hollow cheeks, the rheumy, bleared eyes, the quivering, shriveled lips, the straggling tail of dirty grey hair.
Has the whole of life become an illusion? If I have become Elmsham, then he must have become me. Locked. All locked, every door. I am Edward George Eaton, that's who I am. This is not me, this body. Elmsham, what have you done to me? Why? Why? Need I ask why? He has stolen my life, my youth. How long has he been leaping from body to body? How long? A desk. Locked. I must know what there is in that desk.
And then Edward Eden Elvesham found a poker. And with the poker, in a frenzy, he attacked the desk.
All right, sir. Everything's all right, sir. Mr. Elmsham, sir. You shouldn't have... Elmsham! Come up here at once. The master's bad again.
I can't bear this. A week now, and these people, they will not allow me access to the street. I'm confined, kindly and with respect, but confined, for they think I've taken leave of my senses. The doctors and the nurses, my secretaries, Elmsham's secretaries. Not mine. This is not mine, none of this, none of it. I must find him, I must find Elmsham. And I must...
Must what?
He walks the streets alive and young and healthy in my body. waiting for his own body, Elmsham's body, to die. Oh, my... I have no money. No checkbook. They tell me the bank doesn't recognize my signature. For my signature, at least, is still my own. They won't allow me to go to the bank personally. These people are hungry. 2 days ago, I was a youngster with all my life before me. Now I'm a furious old man, unkempt and desperate and miserable, prowling about a great luxurious house. I must write this down. Every word of it, sir. The world shall... Who will believe it? No one. But I must write it down. Nothing must be left unsaid. My name is Edward George Eden. I was born...
And Edward George Eden, become Egbert Elvesham, wrote. For 2 long days, refusing food to the astonishment of the frightened servants. 2 days. And then he collapsed, and they put him to bed and fed him. When he'd regained a little of his old man's fast-failing strength, he rose and began to write again.
I do not... Clearly, no. I take it he has transferred the whole of his memories, the accumulation that makes up his personality, from this old, withered brain of his to mine. He has changed bodies. One desperate experiment I am about to try. This morning, with the help of a table knife I had secreted at breakfast, I succeeded in breaking open a fairly obvious secret drawer in this wrecked writing desk. I discovered nothing save a little glass phial containing a white powder. Around the neck of the phial was a label, and written on this label was one word, release. This is almost certainly poison. He, Elsham, has placed poison in my way, and I should be sure that it was his intention to get rid of the only living witness against him. The man has practically solved the problem of immortality. Save for the spite of chance, he will live in my body until it has aged, and then, again, throwing it aside, he will assume some other victim's youth and strength. How long has he been leaping from body to body? But I tire of writing. The powder seems to be soluble in water. The taste is not unpleasant.
He's dead, right enough. He's dead, Else. Poor old man. Gonna be able to do now, all right. Soon we'll be looking for new jobs again, once the estate's warmed up and all the legal procedures gone through. I was not in the habit of thinking the job would be a long one, seeing his bad health and that. Give us a hand with him. He's not heavy. Then you best go for the doctor.
The powder appears to be soluble in water. The taste is not unpleasant.
The whole story was written down and left upon Mr. Elsham's desk. His dead body lay between the desk and the chair. The chair had been pushed violently back, probably by his last convulsions. There, Egbert Elsham was found by his butler and a maid called Elsie. At least it was the body of Egbert Elsham. The story was written in pencil and in a crazy hand, quite unlike the philosopher's usual minute characters. There remain only two curious facts to record. There was certainly some connection between Elsham and Eaton, since the whole of Elsham's property was bequeathed to the young man. But he never inherited. When Elsham committed suicide, Eaton was, strangely enough, already dead. 24 hours before, he had been knocked down by a cab and killed instantly at the crowded crossing at the intersection of Gower Street and Euston Road. So that the only human being who could have thrown light upon this strange and bewildering story is beyond the reach of questions. Did Egbert Elsham really change bodies with the young student, tricking him in that diabolical way? Or was the whole story just a wild fancy of an old man's senile mind?
Beyond Midnight is presented every Friday night at 9:30 by Biotex, the new soak and pre-wash powder. The program is adapted for broadcasting and produced by Michael McCabe.